Technological advancements that were once considered science fiction have become commonplace in everyday life. Smart home devices, robots, and drones, all examples of technologies that are being adopted by both enterprise and consumers. As is often the case, the expanse of innovation can outpace a developer's ability to appropriately protect their intellectual property, leaving inventors vulnerable. Finnegan attorneys Elizabeth Farrell and Xiaobin Zhu join us now to discuss the critical practice of protecting IP for new technology. Beth, technologies such as smart devices, robotics, and drones run on autonomous or semi-autonomous systems. What is an autonomous system?
I like to think of it as a system in which some aspects of control of the system are done by the device itself within certain parameters that are set by usually a human being. I think a thermostat is a great example of an early autonomous system. It collected information about the environment and then did some sort of computation and generated an output. And in the case of a thermostat, it's to change the furnace or the air conditioner. I think what people have discovered now is that the autonomous system is for furthering some larger mission. You know, if you think about drones, it's usually about filming or monitoring something. It might be about driving a car or performing some other task.
Many of the technologies we're talking about here were developed in university settings prior to commercial availability. Some came out of startup businesses, and others research from, say, the Defense Department and other government agencies. Beth, what are some reasons these innovations have moved so quickly from being used for specific research projects to becoming widespread solutions?
I think a couple of different things have happened. One, obviously the processors have gotten faster and cheaper. The type of fast memory that's required for operating one of these systems has become more readily accessible. But I also think advancements in battery power have made a big difference. Batteries last longer now and they're lighter. What I do think is an interesting outcrop of this is that there's a lot of new designs now that really didn't exist before. If you look at the original unmanned aerial vehicles, which were the first set of drones, they really resembled an aircraft without a pilot, and now we have quadcopters, and a quadcopter does not look like anything that a person would be able to fly. I think the same thing's happened with robots. They don't necessarily look like humans anymore. Partly it is a technological area, part of it's the new designs, and I think part of it is a recognition that these systems really do have a big application beyond the lab or beyond the defense sector. You have the Nest thermostat, which is very popular. You also have drones that are now used for things like monitoring crops or firefighting, and even real estate agents are using drones to make promotional videos for houses. So I really think that people have just recognized that they have a lot of uses, and that's one of the reasons why they're becoming so popular.
Beth, it's been asserted that the transition from educational to commercial utilization has resulted in a surprising lack of IP protection. Why is that?
I think it's maybe the speed. Some of these things just sort of take off, and the company doesn't have time to sit back and think about a comprehensive IP strategy. What we encounter is that folks who are involved in research have considered utility patents, but they haven't necessarily considered other forms of protection. When a company is reliant on a flagship product or few products, they need to really carefully consider other forms of IP protection. That might include trademarks, using design patents to protect the appearance of the product, or innovative replacement parts. And finally, consider copyrights for your advertisements and even your manuals. I think another thing to consider is what ideas are you going to maintain as trade secrets, and what are you going to go ahead and use to get some of these other forms of protection? If you decide to maintain things as trade secrets, then you really need to consider the appropriate non-disclosure agreements and make sure that you have those things in place. I think the last point is that it's important to seek protection outside the United States also. If you sell the product outside the United States, or if you make the product outside the United States, then you really need to consider getting various forms of protection overseas as well. In addition to speed, I also think that cost is probably a factor, but I feel like this is something where if you almost can't afford not to properly protect your product. In many cases, these companies hope to get acquired one day, and honestly, I think that at that point, the IP can actually be a really valuable asset in addition to something that they just spend money on.
Xiaobin, what impact has the Supreme Court's ruling in Alice versus CLS Bank had on technologists who are attempting to protect their patents?
Before talking about what impact, probably we want to know what kind of rule from the Alice versus CLS Bank has adopted in that case. That case really just saying we adopt another previous U.S. Supreme Court case called Mill. Mill case really just adopted two steps analysis. First step is really saying whether the claim directed to an abstract idea like the law of nature or natural phenomena, those kinds of things cannot be patented. Like the software per se related to today's topic, like the robots and a wearable device or drones using a lot of software. So software itself cannot be patented. Does that mean we cannot patent at all on software-related patents or inventions? Actually not. If we adopt right strategy, we can patent those inventions. So what we need to do really just focus on the technology itself instead of like the pure software. We have to say it's improving computer technology. We're doing some steps between different computer components, especially when we're talking about the robots. So our initial thought that robots really is different from people just thinking it's a physical terminals walking around as robots. When we're talking about robots here, so it's something sitting in the cloud, the more related to the cloud computation, using the more advanced searching technology, and also using the big data. The robots, virtual robots, sitting in the cloud, sending the instruction to all terminals, including the smart home devices or drones. Smart home devices and drones, or including wearable devices, they're just terminals receiving the signals or collect data from the environment, then send back to the robot sitting in the cloud. So then virtual robots send back instruction to those terminals to implement that. When we patent on those technology, we have to consider those aspects. Then to avoid the Alice versus Sears Bank ruling preventing from getting patent.
And finally, Shobhan, what considerations should emerging technology developers take to protect their intellectual property?
I think technology in those fields, we have to consider what current technology changed our life, changed the traditional or conventional technology. When we're talking about the IP protection now, we have to consider now it's called Internet of Things. Everything's on the Internet, on the network. So not like before, you can trace down infringers very easily. Now on internet, hiding somewhere and across borders. So, and also while we trying to protect the IP, for example, for the patent, we have to think about who are the infringers. For example, for the cloud computing, is that merchant tenants really sitting using the cloud? Are those infringers, or the end consumers, are they infringers, or the infrastructure provider or platform provider or software provider? So we have to think about who are the infringers. Then we draft the patent in a certain way in order to target different infringers. As for the patent, maybe we have to think about the other aspect of the IP, for example, for the trademark, for the copyright, and for the trade secret, because nowadays, when you make a copy of other people's technology, it's very easy to make it a copy, and the cost of the infringement is very low. So how to prevent that from happening? We have to think about the sophisticated method, not like a single-handed way to protect it. So, for example, we have to utilize the trademark, trade dress, the copyright, even like a contract. You have to ask them to sign something before they're using your services or using your application in order to later you force them, even they're hiding somewhere, but by signing there and you collect the information and something like that. So we really have to think about how to overcome the difficulties the current technology has brought to us and protect your technology and your product.
I completely agree with Xiaobin here. I think it's really important to think about layering different forms of intellectual property to properly protect your emerging technology. What we found is that when it comes time to assert your various forms of intellectual property, the more you have, the better case you can make that the infringer stole your idea. Some forms of intellectual property, such as trademarks or design patents, might actually be more accessible to juries and judges than some forms of very complex utility patents. And so that's another thing to keep in mind. the best messages is that the more arrows that you have in your quiver, the more chances you have for success.
Our guests have been Elizabeth Farrell and Shaobin Zhu of Finnegan, one of the largest IP law firms in the world. For more commentary on intellectual property news and issues, to listen to other podcasts, and to receive additional information on the firm, please visit www.finnegan.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Finnegan.